culturally, very many cultural practices were burned down. Before the war, people would sit together, people dance together, people have in most cases, festive seasons. People would come up to sing together. But when you look at the community right now, as a result of war, none of those is happening. So you really see, also taking example, putting into direction, our youth also were disabled. The youth were not, in the past, the community, the elders would sit together, they train the youth together, talk together. But as a result of war, youth resulted into doing activities that are not acceptable in the communities. You find them pulling trousers, being Mairungi, and learning other practices outside, which was not in our culture. And then looking at them economically, I can say economically, Northern Uganda is very poor, but I can say as the impact of war, this even worsened the situation. Most of the energetic youth or energetic young men would have involved themselves or engaged themselves into most of the young men or most of the youth that would have engaged themselves maybe into economic development were had their limbs cut. Others also had their mouth locks. Others were also burnt in houses, and they were all disabled in such a way that they cannot really physically involve themselves into making activities that would impact positively into the community. And all this bring us into the mental health consequences that CCVS as an organization is trying to address. And all these psychological health consequences is as a result of war. So we are tackling the root cause in order to see the changes into the communities that we are serving. Thank you so much. Lynn, can you go to the next? Okay, up there we are seeing the mental health problems that came as a result of war, and we are looking at depression and grief. When we look at depression as a result of war, this brought a number of things in the communities, in the minds of people. People have suicidal thoughts. A lot of sadness, loss of hope, and other people lost interest in the things they loved most. And this affected them mentally. Then looking at also grief, we're talking of depression and grieving. Grieving, most people lost so many things. People lost houses, houses were burned. People lost loved ones, and they grieved for them. And then when we look at trauma, other people were abducted, others witnessed their people being killed, and others killed people themselves. And so this alone brings a lot of trauma into their lives, and leading into a number of things like nightmares. People have flashbacks and avoidance. And then the anxiety. One of the mental health problems that we also address is the anxiety. As a result of this, people worry a lot about tomorrow. Most of these people do not know what the future holds for them. They have not gone to school due to war. Their husbands were killed. Their parents were killed. And people lost hope in life. So when we're looking at anxiety, we just associate this into the worry of people maybe thinking about what can I do next. And then the next one is psychosis. As a result of the war, people witnessed some things either directly or indirectly. They lost their property, their loved ones, and at the end, they suffered psychologically. And then this also brought a number of behavioral problems. For example, most children who left their parents in the war, they found themselves in camps. And probably most of these children became maybe street kids. They involved themselves like in stealing, drinking, that, with the intention that they are going to cope with their situations. And you find also children involved into fighting. The same applies to the big camps. And of course, the other social life that people had in their families disappeared. So people were confined together, and of course a number of things came up, and this led into a number of behavioral challenges into the communities that we are working in. And then we look at also the loss of esteem and confidence. Some people now feel inferior, they feel they are not worth because what they went through, because of what they went through. For example, child mothers who were abducted, they returned home with the children, they were stigmatized. Some of them even didn't know the parents, I mean the father to their children. And some of the children were abused. They could call them very many names, they called them corn, they called them adui, very many words that kept on ringing into their minds. And this made them not really love themselves. They felt if they could go back, but of course the situation there was also not good. So a person will feel he or she is not worth living. Then looking at the societal ideation, most people who suffered war lost hope in life, and others feel like killing themselves. Others even feel like killing like someone, or others even as they sit, they keep on thinking of whatever they did, and automatically, because most people were forced also to kill. So at times, like when a person did something, maybe he was forced to kill a friend or to kill a brother, a person may think of either also taking his life away because of the things that happened in the past, which was not like his or her intention. And then when we look at stress also as under the problems of the mental health, people get stressed because of so many things. Stress is a short-term condition, but impacts the life of a person negatively. For example, during the war, people were forced to leave their homes, to live in the camps. They had to wait for food, for example, from World Food Program. And if the food have not come, of course, people had nothing to eat. People had to wait for clothes. People had to wait for very many things from their organizations. Unlike when they were in their home, they had their foods in their granaries, they had their food in their gardens, and they would just pick. And of course, this created a lot of stress in the lives of very many people that we are working. And then we look at also alcohol, stroke, substance abuse. And during the war, people were stressed, confined in one place. I can say the word I can use is people were very ill, and as a result, very many involved themselves like into drinking. They had nowhere to go. You just find yourself meandering within the camp. So you find people drinking as a way to socialize, and hence most of the people got infected. People indulged themselves into very many bad practices by use of drugs. Very many youth got spoiled. Very many children went into street to borrow money, or to borrow food, or to do any other thing that could bring money into their lives. And then down, we are looking at the comorbidity. The comorbidity here means one can either suffer stress or more, stress or more the problems that is included above. So looking at the diagram, you can see it can either suffer from trauma, can suffer from psychosis, and at the same time can suffer from stress. So as one problem is treated, another keeps coming. So the cycle here just explains whatever I've just talked about. Thank you so much. Lynn, the next slide. Thank you. Our project goal. Our Center for Children Situation is funded by Trust Fund for Victims. We have a fire project 2019-2024. Trust Fund for Victims is just is like a sister to ICC. And Trust Fund for Victims consider working with victims who suffered war effective 1st July 2002 to date. Why July 2002 to date? It's because that was when the Rome Statute was signed. The Trust Fund for Victims mandates are to implement court-ordered reparations and to provide assistance to victims and families. Another goal is the overall goals of the, the overall goal of the project are twofold, although both are closely related to each other. One of them is offer psychological rehabilitation services to war-affected children, youth, adults, through providing specialized psychosocial counseling and supporting the rebuilding of social relationships and network. How do we do this? We do this through individual counseling, through group counseling, and through couple counseling. And then the next goal is to increase the local capacity and know-how of the community stakeholders on psychosocial health, providing basic psychosocial support and referral pathway. Through this, we look at the training of the community stakeholders, for example, the religious leaders, the VHTs, the cultural leaders, among others. We do train them on psychosocial mental health services. We train them on the PFA and basic skills in counseling. Thank you. So that for the cases that can be handled by the people who are trained, they handle them, giving them the basic counseling. But for those cases that they cannot handle, they refer them to the expatriates. Thank you. Lynn, the next. Yeah, our project objectives. The objectives are the one, offering psychological rehabilitation services to 500 direct war victims by April 2020. That is this year. And then the next one is enhancing social support and cohesion among 890 war-affected community members through organizing community therapies and community dialogue sessions by April 2020. How were we doing our dialogue meetings? A problem may be identified by the community members, so people would sit together to handle the identified case. For example, a suicidal ideation case was identified in one of the communities in Ogur, where people came together, people sat to find out the root cause of the problem, and what they find out what is the way forward. And the solution is looked at as a group, not as an individual. That is what CCVS did. And then the community therapy, this is a non-specialized approach, where people with similar challenges come together and discuss their challenges as a group, seek for support from each other, then the main focus here is people focus on the solution. How are we going to address this? If UNICEF has this, maybe I can just give my problem. Maybe I had the same case and this is how it was handled. So we just focus on the solution, not the problem. And then the third objective is increasing awareness and knowledge about the impact of war and armed conflict onto the psychological health of individuals, families, and communities by 2020. Here we work at health centers, we work at communities. We also create awareness in the prison, Liramin prison. So those are the areas basically where we work. Then we also work. Then can you move to the next? Thank you so much. At this time, basically what I've given is the background of CCS, and at this point I am taking us, handing us over to Pius. Pius, you're going to take us from the target groups. You're welcome.
Thank you so much, Eunice, and all the invited partners. Extending from where Eunice stopped, if you noticed our objectives, there are people that we work with that meet the criteria of our project. And in our target groups, we call our beneficiaries direct and indirect. Our direct beneficiaries, we borrowed the definition of our direct beneficiaries from ICC. Direct beneficiaries, according to ICC, are natural persons who have suffered harm as a result of commission of any crime, of course, within the jurisdiction of the court. And in our case, CCVS, the crimes are majorly related to victims of war and crimes against humanity. Former child soldiers, torture survivors, victims of sexual and gender-based violence. So, former child soldiers, torture survivors, persons with physical and mental health problems, and those victims are the ones we call direct beneficiaries or direct war victims. They are our direct clients. The indirect ones are those that benefit from us directly or indirectly. The ones that benefit from us directly, community stakeholders, could also be mobilizers, and are also affected by collective. I don't know if you're listening to me, but they're affected by collective violence and they need specialized psychological support and capacity buildings. The community stakeholders and mobilizers receive a lot of support, supervisions, trainings, mentorships, to link our services to the communities. Then some individuals, families, and communities of our direct clients also benefit. For instance, if I am a client, people in my household will benefit from the counseling lessons or the trainings that I've benefited from, because we expect that how messages are cascaded to people in neighborhood, within the households, and community members. So there are those people as well that have not gone through the torture or war, but I got mental health problems. And when carry out our screening exercises, we realize they really need support, counseling support. So those people are also not left out. We find ways of supporting them. Those are the target people or the target beneficiaries that we work with. We group them into direct and indirect beneficiaries. Of course, these people supported in the next slide that we're going to through a therapeutic process, depending on where the categories belong to. Depending on the category they belong to. So we call that a therapeutic approach. In CCVS, we go through a counseling process, which is systemic in nature. It's a collaborative. We say object activities are a collaborative approach or stance because we engage or encourage a relationship between beneficiaries and therapists to try and promote a positive change by working together. So we involve the
Yes, we lost you.
Sorry, my network, I think. We work from a collaborative stance, and like I said before, collaborative because we emphasize the relationship between beneficiaries.
I'm afraid we lost bias altogether. So let me just continue from here while he tries to establish a more stable internet connection. So what Bias was saying that we, within CISVS Uganda, we work from a systemic approach, meaning that we always place the individuals that we're supporting, so the direct war victims within, we always support them within their system, being within the family, within the community as well, as there are many interacting factors that we need to take into account. And secondly, we also work from a collaborative stance, meaning that we see the client as the expert, and we see the counseling relationship as combined effort to tackle the mental health problems that some of our clients are experiencing. I think Bias is back online, so let me give him the floor again. Bias, if you're there. I think the connection is still not good enough, so let me just continue. So from the therapeutic approaches that we implement within CISVS Uganda, we elaborated a lot of different therapeutic activities on mental health and psychosocial supports. The first one being sensitization and psychoeducation, in which we go out into the communities, into the schools, health centers, to sensitize people about mental health, what could be possible symptoms of mental health problems, how can someone recognize that someone might be struggling with their mental health, what can people also do, and also on psychoeducation, so on different mental health problems that Eunice talked about at the beginning of this presentation. Secondly, we provide individual therapy, so one-on-one sessions. So people always go through, we will talk about that in the next slide, a therapeutic process in which people are first screened, then assessed, and based on the assessment and based on the input of the client and also the expertise of the counselor, we either engage them in individual, family, couple, or group therapy. So based on the problems, for example, sometimes it can be a very personal problem that it's not possible to talk about in a group, then people are engaged within individual therapy. If it's an issue within the family or between a couple, we can also engage them in couple and group therapy, couple and family therapy. Sorry, I think I was out myself for a few moments there as well. So I was just talking about the different therapy approaches that we implement, just finalizing on couple and family therapy. Then we also have group therapy in which we use the approach of Judith Herman, which is mostly focused on trauma processing. So if we feel that some clients through the assessment can also be grouped in a group therapy, then the group therapy is also started. We developed our own intervention of about 14 sessions, but we're still trying to implement and pilot a more condensed therapy protocol as well for groups. Then we also have community therapy. In community therapy, this is an open intervention, and it's different from group therapy in that community therapy is open. Group therapy is always with a closed group because you go through a process together. Community therapy is open to everyone who wants to share and talk about psychosocial problems within the community. The focus is on connecting discussions of psychosocial issues with cultural norms, and it's a very open and a very engaging technique as well. It's not about giving advice, it's about really sharing your stories and looking for a way forward together. Then we also have implement community dialogues, which is more of a one-off intervention. Community therapy is much more of a continuous engagement, in which we also train community therapy facilitators. So people within the communities also to facilitate the groups and also to take over when we eventually phase out. In community dialogues, we organize a session with a wider group on certain topics, for example, alcohol and substance abuse, on the impact of war on mental health, in which people can also share, and then some ways forward are also found. And then finally, we also implement some play therapy. So I think that is briefly on the activities. I'm just wondering if Pius has again joined us and can take over from here. Pius?
Yes, Lena, thank you so much. My network has been very bad, but I've worked on it. Bridging from where Lynn stopped, we undergo as an organization a therapeutic process to try and see if we can work on the problems, the mental health problems or the psychological problems that already we are calling clients, direct clients, are facing. So it takes us a process, which process starts with mass sensitization. We create awareness on the understanding about common mental health problems, the major causes, not forgetting the fact that war also brought about some of the mental health problems, but there are other factors as well, like Lynn said, substance and alcohol abuse, and many others. So the essence of sensitization is to bring to the awareness that certain things that facing their feeling make them behave in a way that they don't understand are psychological in nature or otherwise. And if they are going through that, there are still areas of support or where they can seek that support from. So as an organization, we try and ensure that individuals are faced with or manifesting with mental health problems are supported. So on being sensitized, those that meet our criteria will either self-report for and we screen them, or they're referred by people within the communities, like opinion leaders, any other person. It could be you attending this workshop. It could be that health worker who knows that CCVS supports people therapeutically. So the different ways that people get to be supported by CCVS. But there are those that on being screened might be facing or manifesting with different concerns, might be having different concerns that as CCVS we cannot offer support on. It could be live loads because entirely we don't do that. Our work is psychological in nature. So when we interface with individuals that need live load support, we make referrals to the partners that we know provide that. There are those that need legal support. We also make referrals to either police, justice centers, depending on the need of the client. But on the side of mental health support or psychological support, we still go ahead to enroll them should they qualify or meet the criteria that they are war victims from the 1st July 2002. But there are also referral ins. People can refer from partners to CCVS, maybe from client also to CCVS. CCVS supports this ABCD. Can you please try and call this therapist who comes here every morning, or link up with this community stakeholder? So this person is referred in, and we still go ahead and screen this person. And if they meet the criteria, we enroll them for sessions. So we decide to see them in either groups, families, as couples, individuals, whatever the nature of the concern or the problem is. And then, of course, from there, we proceed with the therapeutic intervention, the sessions that are in steps to try and support the client. Our sessions normally run from 5 to 14 sessions, depending on which therapy it is. We use different techniques. I'm glad that some of the partners we've invited and are attending understand this very well. NET, CBT, that's why we have systemic, and we have quite a number of therapies, CBT, and a lot more than that. So follow-up assessments are conducted on terminating these clients. Our follow-up assessments are done at 3 months, 6 months, and at 12 months. So it is at the end of the 12th month that our assessment should inform us that I think we can client ABCD, who is now demonstrating resilience and is coping really well. But we do not limit the door, still getting in touch with our therapists. Our contacts are out there. We still sit with sensitive on radio and any other community sensitizations in schools, in communities. If we've not terminated our client might be going through other challenges. For instance, land conflict might arise along the way when you're completing the sessions before termination. So we still refer our clients for support, but we follow up and ensure that these clients have actually received support from the referral places. Thank you. So generally, after understanding our therapeutic process, we dive deep and direct into what transpired in 2019, overlapping to 2020, from the period of April 2019 to March 2020. That's 1 year of our project implementation. I'll leave the next slide. The next slide gives us an overview of the project achievements, and we've categorized them. You see them, our outcomes cover those areas. When we say providing psychological rehabilitation services, we have quite a number of therapies there. We have group therapy, we've got individual therapy, we have couple, like my previous colleagues mentioned. So the three therapies contributed to an achievement of, for women, we had 221 women benefiting from our psychological rehabilitation. 80 men, that's quite low, you'll see. You might just ask me later on, but only 80 men were able to benefit for our psychological rehabilitation services. Like you can see that graph. Training community stakeholders and community therapy facilitators. These are smaller groups, but they hail from within the communities where we support. We trained 31 women and 83 men on areas that support them in providing basic counseling services within the communities, enriching them with basic mental health services that can help them help identify clients, specifically community stakeholders, make referrals, and provide the basic counseling there. And the ones that they cannot fully support, they go ahead and refer them to our therapists, or they also refer them to sub-county headquarters, wherever they can access the services in the neighborhood. So we track these services using the referral booklet. But the community therapy facilitators, like Glenn said earlier on, they were trained to provide community therapy. Like Eunice said earlier on, community therapy is a non-specialized service. So we try and encourage community members to gather according to the time they've agreed, the help or with the support of the trained community facilitator to discuss common problems within the communities that affect them, but as a team, as a community, they can come up with solutions that are contextual and not wait for someone from away to come and help them, give them an advice. We believe that two heads are better than one. And if you come from the this community that are experiencing such situations, we might have better solutions for them, so that we also do organization. So the beneficiaries of the community therapy I'm talking about, the support of the community facilitators, resulted into a total of about over 400. Like you can see, 115 women, if you're keen on the key there, women is, if I think that's blue, then 131 are the men. So those were the beneficiaries of community therapy within the specific communities that we implemented them. And our last area in this presentation that also contributed to our achievement as an organization is increasing awareness and knowledge of the impact of war and armed conflict on psychological health. So if you can see, we realized high numbers there, 2,357 women as compared to 2,386 men were part and parcel of increasing awareness and knowledge. So the, most of them benefited from sensitizations through radio stations, others from within the communities, others from schools, health centers. And there are those that, of course, visited us in our offices. So they benefited from such activities. Overall, like you can see, 2,724 women as compared to 2,680 contributed to our project achievements. We picked out key achievements that we could highlight and point out, and that could give us a good picture of our project achievement. So diving deep into our project implementation, on the first area of providing psychological rehabilitation services, like I told you earlier on, community therapy in itself contributed to a number of, you're seeing there, two clients benefited from community therapy, one male and one female, as you can be guided by the key, women is that is represented by the color blue, and I can't tell very well that color. It could be orange or something close to it, but you can see the distinction. One and one woman, that's a couple. They came from the same household, so they received a couple counseling to be supported through couple therapy to try and harmonize the difficulties they were facing. On individual therapy, we registered. You might ask me, what are the targets? I'll also tell you. On individual therapy, 99 women as compared to 50 men. You'll also ask me previously, I said only 80 men and 221 women on the first slide. In general, on the side of psychological rehabilitation, but on individual therapy itself, you realize more men prefer to be supported through individual therapy as women are comfortable being supported through individual and couple therapy. So the numbers are really good, both individual and couple. 99 men benefited from individual, total to 149 for both men and women. I mean women, 99 women. Then on group therapy, 121 women as compared to 29 men, totaling to 150 received therapy. So in total, 301, 221 women and 80 men, as we proceed to the next slide, were supported as clients in psychological rehabilitation services at CCVS. My next slide also contributes to our overall achievement, and it's about the local capacity. Under strengthening local capacity, we had two activities: training of community therapy facilitators. Our target was 12. We trained 4 women and 8 men. Of course, these people also received follow-up trainings after the training. We try and follow up the work they're doing through a follow-up training, but amidst also there is support supervision that is directly provided by our psychological counselors with the support of
Thais, we lost you for a bit.
An area that registered significant outcomes. Community therapy registered significant outcomes. Like I said earlier, on 246 beneficiaries, 115 women and 131 men all benefiting. But if you can see on the next slide, it gives us a picture of some of the common concerns or problems they discussed. And you'll agree with me that down there, the communities, there are lots of land disputes. And when we come together as community members, we can find better solutions for them. So it scored as a percentage of 42, followed by 27 for gender-based violence during the discussions of community therapy. 16% for child abuse, 7% poverty. It's true that there's poverty down there within the communities, but there are things like ones above, scoring high, that also exacerbate the level of poverty. Poor hygiene in the household, scoring 4%, cohabiting 2%, poor budgeting skills, and others that are not included here. So you'll agree with me that this therapy really helps. It really helps because the outcomes that came along with this therapy, we registered behavioral traits being improved. Positive behavioral traits. People started to forgive one another. People are now resilient to life challenges, socializing and being empathetic. Separated families are also reuniting. Some are already reunited as a result of community therapy. I mean, it was 90, but because it was really helping, so we registered a high number of 246. So this encouraged us, and we'll still continue to have such activities. Going forward to the next slide, we're talking about increasing awareness and knowledge of the impact. I'll enter the next slide. Increasing awareness of the impact of war and armed conflict onto psychological health. I did highlight earlier on that activities that are sensitization related, especially on radio, we scored 163. You might ask me, 163, the radio covers quite a number. There could be so many factors that could be part of the Q&A later on. The people that call in are the ones we take the numbers. The men and women that call in to contribute to the specific topics on radio are the ones we document. But we also acknowledge the fact that there are very many people out there that are listening and cannot afford to call into the radio or cannot go through the radio networks. We acknowledge that. Sensitization in health centers registered a total of 596, 440 women, 156 men. In prisons, Lira main prisons, registered a total of 608, 68 women, 540 men. In communities, registered a total of 914, 485 women, 429 men. And in schools, a total of 2462 pupils and students were sensitized in mental health related topics that are really helpful, with 1,319 young girls benefiting and 1,143 boys being supported. Overall, 4,743, as you can see that graph, were supported with both men and women. As you can see, there is sensitivity. I mean, both men and women were supported more or less equally. And then as you go to the next slide, we registered as a result of our implementations, numerous lessons learned, but we picked out key ones that could really help us focus on our implementation. With your support, with your guidance, you realize that the highs and lows in that slide, sometimes it's unfortunate that we cannot support everyone within the community, and yet they qualify for our services. So we register enormous need of MHPSS services. And the people that need our services, of course they qualify, but become impatient to wait for a particular time cycle. We have targets that we intend to run within a specific cycle, say from October to December. We expect that these clients are supported within that time very well, to the point that they can where they register a positive change. That's the assumption. But sometimes the people there have not. But sometimes I thank you for your in a little bit the previous slide. Sometimes we cannot support all of them because we have groups that have a maximum number to be supported. But individuals, sometimes we don't have enough human capacity to offer total support to everyone. So yes, it's true. We have a high number of people out there who really need our support. But we also realize that the gaps in referral network, we don't have, much as we do trainings on referral pathways with our stakeholders, mobilizers, or we sensitize about referral system, it's not yet very strong within the communities. It's something that we've taken on, we took on immediately on completing this activity. Sometimes we were affected by situation, but we appreciate the fact that all our stakeholders, they now have referral booklets to try and document the referrals made. We also realize there's need for more the indirect beneficiaries that do not receive enough of our services because, as I said earlier on, we have two criteria that we emphasize for us to offer proper support. But going forward, most of the indirect beneficiaries benefit from psychoeducation and sensitization through the various platforms, but we'll be supporting them on top of the platforms I talked about through PFA with our remote counselors. So like someone posted, community therapy really registered significant outcomes. I can still bring it on board the outcomes during the Q&S session, but I highlighted a few of the outcomes, positive behavioral traits, families reuniting after breakups, and many others. Failed appointments at health centers. Most of the clients that we support from health centers come from very far places, distant places, and when you share the sessions with them, they may not turn up as agreed because they don't have the transport to meet with our therapist at the agreed counseling center. We also experienced as an organization breakages with our machines that take us to the field, and there were poor roads. Then the last one that of course everyone has gone through is COVID-19 lockdown. We couldn't really complete our activities within the project year of 2019. Our project runs from April, it ran from April 2019 to March 2020. So those were the lessons learned, the highs and lows that I talked about. Next slide brings us, we also as an organization, like Lynn said earlier on, we do a lot of research. So this time around, our need was backed by the idea of opening up a new project site and also have our impact felt widely. So following the fact that the LRA war also affected a lot the districts in Acholi sub-region, so we conducted a mental health needs assessment and to try and map out the needs for psychological rehabilitation services in two potential new project sites like you're reading with me, help us establish a new field office. And to achieve that, we were guided by the achievements you're reading, examining the MHPSS, mental health and psychosocial support needs of the targeted population in Kipgum and Pader districts. So, find out the relevant and current MHPSS resources and interventions provided to the targeted population of Kipgum and Pader, and how their needs are being responded to. And lastly, we also needed to establish some specific recommendations for ways in which the gaps and bottlenecks can be addressed regarding MHPSS services and rehabilitation. So we had to come up with a methodology to see that our research questions were really answered. So we used a descriptive cross-sectional research design. A study that's conducted once. Research or survey included the ones you're seeing on the screen. We had to do a dive into a literature review to establish with evidence the areas that suffered the most the consequence of the LRA war. Is it Kipgum? Is it Pader? If it's in Kipgum, then which specific areas suffered the most over the district? We also did, we used the tool we're calling a survey. Then we also used a key informant interview where we interviewed people with informed responses on mental health and specific mental health challenges within the districts of Kipgum and Pader. and kind of support the receiving and how they can be supported, what can be factored in. But also we went ahead to do focus group discussions with various categories of respondents. So using the tools above, the categories that we interviewed included community members, teachers, health facility staff, local leaders, district, sub-county and district officials, opinion leaders. Like you can see in the next slide. Of course, we had a geographical scope that I've been talking about and the location. Like you can see in that map where Padera and Kitgum districts are located. We, according to our literature review, their literature review informed us that Muchwini, Orom, and Lagoro suffered a lot of the consequences. So we had to take our assessment to those sub-counties and those ones under Pade district, Acholibu, Pajule, and Nyagura. So these areas are the ones that will inform us whether CCVS needs to open up a new field office, also extend services that are being provided in the districts of Lang sub-region here, Lira, Oyam, and Leptong. So I can see some of the questions coming in, so we'll answer them during the Q&A. So some of the sampling strategies used with simple random and for reasons I said that some people are key informants and then the community members needed us to. We had a total number of respondents to be interviewed. We interviewed 436 respondents, of which 51% were female, 49 male, 231 from Kitgum, 205 Padera. And if you can see from the charts, the first chart, Kitgum district, the one in green, we used a survey from the survey tool. From the survey tool, you realize that for the men, the total number of men were 74. Kitgum district is the inner cell, the inner circle. The Padera is the outer circle. So 74 men and 76 women were interviewed for a survey in Kitgum district, whereas 68 women and 82 men from Padera were interviewed for a survey tool. For FGDs in Kitgum, 30 men and 42 women, and then in Padera there were 30 women and 18 men. Key informant interviews had in Kitgum 3 women and 6 men, and in Padera 3 women and 4 men. So totaling to the numbers you're seeing up there. So you realize that in the next slide, most of these respondents informed us about the case of mental health problems, of which they highlighted a number of them, since alcohol taking the highest lead, as you can see there, scoring 100% of 15.9, with 16.7 in Kitgum and 15% in Padera. So you realize substance alcohol abuse is a problem. That said, it was followed by the effect of the war, which seems to be the main entry point for psychological support at CCBS Uganda. Indeed, it is. It doesn't seem. So it scored 13.2% on average. We're saying the war itself is causing mental health problems in the specific districts, Kitgum and Pader, with an average of 32%, but in Kitgum alone, 9.7% of the respondents mentioned the effect of the war as the major cause of mental health problems. In Pader, a high 16.7%. And that followed by witchcraft. Most of us know that most people relate mental health to witchcraft. So most of them mentioned that witchcraft is also causing mental health problems. Which mental health problems we'll see in the next slides. But other causes that also we can witness from the screen are contagious diseases, poverty, acute malaria, land wrangles, GBV, child neglect and torture, accidents, neurological causes like epilepsy, and many others. So we'll realize in the next slide that these causes resulted into mental health problems that earlier on Eunice highlighted. She talked about some of the manifesting symptoms or the presenting symptoms. So if you look behind, you realize that effect of the war is the major cause of the mental health problems. Which effect of the war can result into trauma? What at CCBS we term it post-traumatic depression. So people who manifest with trauma, go through nightmares and a lot more than that. When they go to places where the butchers, and some of them witnessed their loved ones being killed, so they have bad memories. So that scored a high percentage of 71 in Kitgum and 39 in Pader, an average percentage score of 55. If you're following that slide where the cursor is. So trauma is a major cause of, is a common mental health problem in Kitgum and Pader. You realize, I'll not follow it by average score. There is also anxiety mentioned by respondents. So in Kitgum alone, 4%, as compared to 8% in Pader, mentioned anxiety. They said that they're worried and having fears in their lives. So that's an average score of 6%. Depression in itself in Kitgum, 17% as mentioned by the respondents interviewed, and in Pader 13%, an average of 15%. So it's third to post-traumatic depression. Substance and alcohol abuse in Kitgum was mentioned 7% and 29% high in Pader. So you realize how people consume alcohol in Kitgum and Pader, an average second to trauma, an average of 18%, registered as mental health problem in Kitgum there, neurological lapse at an average of 6%, and symptoms of psychosis at 1%. So those were some of the common mental health problems registered during our mental health needs assessment. They are not far from what we support Lira district areas, Aleptong, Oyam, and Lira. Some of the symptoms we also support. So when asked some of the common sources of for those that are faced with mental health problems, most of them say friends, like having your friends, are a great source of support to them, with Kitgum registering 24.7% per day average of 25.3%, followed by those that say they totally have no support, if you can see there. So that tells you that there is need for mental health support. So 18.3 on average say they don't receive any support for mental health, with they don't receive any support for mental health with Kitgum registered 20.7% and 16 in Pader. Other common sources of support that registered acceptance from the respondents interviewed included religious leaders and counselors, health workers, elders, some people talked about their fathers and other relatives. So you realize we need each other to try and help support one another. And then you can.
Yeah, sorry, if I could interrupt you, I would suggest you go to the conclusions of the mental health needs assessment in the interest of time. Otherwise, we won't have any time to do a proper Q&A section anymore. So the presentation will be shared, and definitely the report is already available onto our website. So I'm just going to skip to conclusions from the mental health needs assessment, and then we can also start winding up our presentation and go into the Q&A. So,
Pius, please, you're welcome. So, conclusively, like we had planned for 90 minutes, from the mental health needs assessment, we realized that there are other causes as well, other than war, that CCBS and other partners needs to support. So, you realize that some of the common causes include drug abuse and domestic violence. So we're also going to support that. During the interviews, for those that were receiving counseling services, like you realized in the previous slide, both individual counseling and group are preferred, but there are those that prefer individual, those that prefer group. So at CCVS, encourage both, depending on the need. Like Leonard, depending on the specific problem, it's either individual or group. So depending on what the situation is, you're supported as an individual or group. CCVS, as we work with scholars, like you saw in the previous achievements, we'll also use the same categories of stakeholders that we're using in this side of the project region to support our field activities. Of course, we'll do a continuous collaboration with the local leaders, health workers, and many others that you saw in the previous slide. The next slide is about Kiowa, which Len takes it up for purposes of time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Pius. Let's just round up the presentation with some future project planning before we go into the Q&A. If you could still briefly take us through. Thank you.
Oh, fine. Thank you so much. Lynn, you can push to the next slide as I go through the next project planning. So we realize that for us to realize a largely felt impact, we need to scale up our interventions with the right human capacity. So this comes with bringing on board enough human resources to try and have our impact largely felt, but also continue to train stakeholders who are the link between CCVS and the communities. We should continue training them on psychosocial support, referral systems, and conduct sensitization and psychoeducation. This will go a long way expanding their knowledge in mental health. We also ensure partners as the future project planning step. Promote partnerships with other actors to strengthen the referral networks. This is really wanting within the project. And then if you noticed gender mainstreaming, every activity, we need to encourage more. Each activity should have both men and women participating to try and have a balanced opinion of how our community members can be supported. Because if we support more of one gender and less of the other, still would have not supported, provided enough support. From the community therapy, we plan to do a research and sustainability and impact of community therapy on the wider community. And lastly, carry out a satisfaction survey, establish the levels of the services we provide as an organization. Of course, some of these initiatives will still, the inputs will be provided in the next dissemination workshop if implemented going forward. Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you so much, Pius. I think this brings us to the end of our presentation, which was a bit longer than anticipated. So this brings us into the Q&A. I hope everyone still has some energy to do a Q&A for about 10 minutes. So we received some questions in the chat box that I would like to present to the presenting panel. So first of all, Eddie Walakira posed a question when Eunice was talking about mental health problems. So do you have any data to back up these indicators? Let me take on this question. Yes, we have it from two main sources. First of all, from our Project M&E framework, in which we, as Pius also outlined, we do a client assessment at intake and also follow-up assessments at certain points in time. Then we also have, in our M&E framework, we also gather a lot of information out of the various activities that we're implementing, such as community therapy, such as sensitization, the psychoeducation that we implement as well. And then I think the mental health needs assessment that we performed at the end of 2019 is also a good example of the research that we're doing. So we both see it from, we both have a backup of mental health problems that we see. So both from the Project M&E framework as research, and I think also a colleague, Rita, also commented in the chat box that they're also seeing similar levels of mental health problems. Secondly, Rita asked a question, and this one I would like to present to Pius, is on getting a bit more deeper into the outcomes of the therapy that is provided, and also about the timing and the content of our follow-up assessments. So Pius, you're most welcome.
Thank you so much, Lynn. Like I emphasized earlier, with community therapy, I said it's a non-specialized therapy. So it engages the efforts of the community members who are participating in the discussions. So throughout our evaluation of activity, positive behavioral traits were registered. And of course, some of the behavioral traits being that were demonstrated and we witnessed forgiving each other. You realize people have lots of differences down there in the community, but they come up openly and say, look, I understand how much this has caused to us. I am really sorry and I truly forgive you. And everything has worked out. Resilience to life challenges. People are socializing, being empathetic. People are standing in other people's shoes. There is increased awareness of community members about the detrimental effects and proper management of thoughts to their mental feelings and behavior, because the topics are related to the information we try and package into understanding mental health in terms of its causes, where can you take the support in case you're manifesting any symptoms, with any symptoms, who can support you immediately if you need any other support, where can you be referred to? So we work with local leaders. During the community therapies, it's not only the community members, but also the sub-county leadership who also provide an eye in terms of monitoring. They also participatory. If there are land dispute related concerns, we engage people that are knowledgeable on land matters within such communities. So those are some of the areas or outcomes that registered, including separated families being reunited through sharing family and productive ideas with couples attending the information sharing sessions. We'll include most of the outcomes. We have evaluation reports on community therapy, and evaluation report on community therapy. So if you're really interested in it, you can have your email, share your email with Lynn down there, and you'll have a report. But also a report for this dissemination will be drafted and shared with everyone. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much, Pius. Another question came from Winnie on the best way to conduct group therapy. Specifically within CISFES Uganda, our counselors have been trained by our partner Center for Victims of Torture within a very, very interesting and very elaborate training on the trauma group approach by Judith Herman. So this approach was also adjusted by CVT to fit within the current context of or the context of Northern Uganda. And we've been piloting and experimenting a bit as well to include a few more sessions on support groups. And now we've also, given the COVID era, we're also trying to experiment in how we can also condense the group therapy a bit more and be able to provide our therapy to more people in a shorter time, while also still addressing the key issues that are at stake or that are important regarding to trauma processing. Another question came from, or another comment came from Rita on the influence of, or the consequences of the whole COVID-19 lockdown and just the general anxiety on mental health and mental health problems. And I think, yeah, definitely we've seen that globally. And also it's also a good opportunity for me to share that we've also been elaborating a survey on that. So we're on the impact of the COVID and the COVID-19 lockdown onto the mental health of our beneficiaries and our partners that we're working with. So we're happy to draft a report and to share it as well. We always try to disseminate as widely as possible. So keep an eye on that, and definitely in our next dissemination webinar, we should also be presenting a bit more, but hopefully a bit sooner. Then another question I would like to put either to Pius or Eunice is on, Simon asks about the relationship, if we also see a relationship between poverty and mental health problems, or how poverty is also influencing mental health problems, and what we're also, how we're also addressing this within the projects.
Yes, Simon, thank you for your question. Yes, we also see most of the times during our screenings and assessments, we realize that most of the needs that come in are livelihoods related. That tells us that, like you saw in the previous slide in Kitgum, poverty is also a possible cause of mental health. But as CCVs, we have effect of the war as the main entry point, but we do not run away from the fact that poverty exists down there, and it could be also one of the reasons exacerbating a rise in mental health problems. That's why we try and collaborate with our partner, with you, with everyone, and make referrals and see that these people are supported better. For now, as an organization, we've not taken up the side of providing a livelihood support that would try and suppress the level of LRA war founded at a level of poverty, and it had to, it made it even worse. So we've not yet taken off or gone back to the level that we were in. That's why in UBOS reports, domestic household surveys, the most recent one, you will realize that this side of the North and Eastern, we're still very behind, and you'll realize the major cause is the effect of the war. But it's true that poverty is also there. So I don't know your question specifically, but if you put it clearly, if you'd want us to integrate it into this, would be very appreciative as well. But for now, we're providing psychological rehabilitation and working hand in hand or partnering with the community stakeholders, national, and of course others out of the country to try and support. That's why we have the donor. There are partners that receive funding from the same donation, but those partners that they play, legal, for instance, Justice Center, livelihoods and mental health, also the organizations. So unfortunately, the major problem has been some of those partners do not implement within our project areas of work. So making a referral of a client who needs livelihood support from Alitong up to Gulu, it's still been tasking. Would try and find a better way of supporting such clients with your guidance, probably. We would want to get some lessons that worked somewhere and see how we can complete the healing process.
Okay, thank you very much, Pius, for that response. I'm not seeing any new questions in the chat box. So I would still like to open up the floor if there's still any comments or any feedback that anyone would like to share, that it's a bit too tricky to type into the chat box. So please, you're very welcome. You can just put on your hand and then we can come to you. Okay, I'm not seeing any hands going up. So I think that takes us to the. Okay, I'm not seeing any hands going up. So I think that brings us to the end of the webinar, in which I want to thank everyone a lot for participating, for creating some time to listen to us and to engage with the information you also heard. And also a big thank you to the whole team of CCUS Uganda for actually doing the implementation and doing the work in the field. And definitely also for our mother organization, CCUS Uganda, and the board of directors have also been very supportive in our operations and the implementation that we do on a daily basis. So thank you so much. Wishing you a nice day. If you still want to further engage with us, we can, let me put on the contacts as well. So you can send us an email, you can call us, you can visit the website. We're very open and we're always very inviting to partners and different people to also give us feedback and to engage with us. So again, thank you very much and have a lovely day.
Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you, Lynn and the team. Well done.
Well done, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Lynn and the team. Thank you. Bye.
Good job.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lynn, Pius, and Ninis.
Bye,
Lynn
and Ninis. Pius and Ninis, I should come and just tie your lines.